You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com. We are supported by listeners like you. Donate per month or make a one-time donation through PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com. Join in on the conversation. Visit the sidebar at wearelibertarians.com and join our Facebook group, meet other listeners, and get our daily news dump.
The Boss Hog of Liberty podcast is the latest hit on the We Are Libertarians Network. Each week, Jeremiah Morrill and Dakota Davis explore life in Henry County, Indiana.
It's a show about our circle of friends, public officials, and our experiences. 80% observation, life, humor, and 20% politics. Boss Hog of Liberty is the day-to-day happenings of Henry County, Indiana, which is just like your community. Add us on iTunes and sample us today.
Dear Leader would want you to.
Oh, the Johnny Rocket launch pad is Liberty. Each week, we strive to bring you the best guests in talk radio. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad delivers weekly interviews of noteworthy politicians, experts, and activists. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is bringing the party to the Libertarian Party and launching ideas in your direction. Check us out at johnnyrocketlaunchpad.com. You can hear me, Kurt Nelson, and the beautiful Heather Nixon talk about the ideas of liberty, rock and roll.
Hey guys, this is Roger Paxton, and if you're fed up with the government running every single aspect of your life, but you're not listening to the Lava Flow podcast yet, then what's wrong with you? Check us out at thelavaflow.com, or just go back to sucking up to the government. The Lava Flow podcast, striking the root every single episode.
It's time to shake up your podcast feed, folks, by subscribing to Lions of Liberty, the only libertarian variety show out there. Spend Mondays with me, Mark Claire, as I feature in-depth interviews with great names in the libertarian community and fun roundtable discussions.
Electric Liberty Land with me, Brian McWilliams, every Wednesday, your weekly dose of comedy, culture, and liberty.
And Felony Fridays with me, John Odermatt, where I expose injustice in the broken criminal justice system.
Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and at lionsofliberty.com.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. We bring you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves while putting people before political parties. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective with the goal of leaving you better informed. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, become a subscriber on Patreon at wearelibertarians.com, and without your financial support, independent media like this cannot exist. In exchange for supporting our program, we give you great bonus content. This show is crowdsourced, so you can send us news with the hashtag WALNews or in our Facebook group or Discord channel. Thank you so much for everybody who's participating in those and using the hashtag. So I got a couple cool stories and found things that I hadn't seen by searching on Twitter for the wall hashtag, so WALNews. Roy's taking your questions and comments via email at editor@wearelibertarians.com. Please be warned that this show is raw, unedited, and authentic, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive. In this show, we will bring you the headlines. We're going to talk about the Republican tax bill. We're going to talk about Zimbabwe. We're going to talk about CBD oil, net neutrality, Time Warner, AT&T. We got like 12, 15 topics we're going to get to over the course of the next hour, hour and a half. So we have a lot for you. We are going to be mostly sex-free. This is going to be a mostly non-sex scandal show. Please put your shirt down, Harry. So with that, let me introduce my co-host for the Tuesday show, as always, Harry Price. How are you, Harry?
Going good, going good. It's not as warm as it has been in the studio the last few weeks.
No fire.
There's no fire this week.
Well, I've been very busy prepping for the show. It's like a beautiful mind and ear.
It is. It's very, I'm actually concerned in here. You're getting these nosebleeds. There is old newspapers, magazines, and books everywhere in
library
here.
Library books. There's 50 library books sitting over there. No, I really am turning into, like, in 50 years, it will literally, this audience and I will be one fully. I will have no other friends. I will be in a cabin in the woods somewhere, like Matt Drudge, just tweeting out to the world my thoughts with my friends, the newspapers and the books and a library. I'm turning into an old crank who just sits alone in his apartment reading strange newspapers from foreign lands.
You've got about like few more steps. I think three more. You've got the beard going. You got the hat and the flannel. So yeah, you're really close. You know, hopefully we'll get the We Are Libertarians truck going by July for you.
That would be fun. Yeah. Yes, I'm doing fine. I do have a sinus infection, but I'm okay. Other than that, I'm really not going crazy. I'm just really having. Thanks for the quotations, Harry. No, I'm having a blast. Like, the reason we have like 15 topics is because I've really, Harry and I were talking about where we're at with We Are Libertarians and where I'm at, really. Mm-hmm. And I'm having a blast kind of getting back into prepping and reading the news. And if you're looking at the Facebook group or if you're looking at my Facebook page or my Twitter page or the Wall Facebook page, you're seeing a lot of news and content and opinions and stuff. And that's just because I learned a long time ago from a comedian named Tim Wilson. He's passed on now, but he's one of the greatest comedians to ever live that you've never heard of. And he's so funny. And I just watched him. He was a genius, a certified genius. And there's also a guy that I work with that goes by Donnie Baker, but his real name's Ron. And he's just a brilliant guy, too. And I was like, what makes them so special as comedians? And it's the amount of writing that they do, the amount of prep work that they do, the amount of just like obsession that they have for their craft. And so it's the more you input into your brain, the more it's going to come out. And so I've been kind of living that the last 3 weeks, and I'm loving it. This has been one of the most fun periods of We Are Libertarians I think I've ever had, because I have I'm not trying to use that word anymore. My nerd switch has been lit
back up.
Yep.
The fire's back.
Yeah. What we were talking about basically is like, instead of building the platform like you did for a year and a half, 2 years, you're back to doing why you started this podcast in the first place.
Yep. The reason why you got on the couch and just said, hey, let's do this. Let's record. Let's do this. Let's have some fun.
Exactly. So I'm having a good time. I hope you're having a good time. I think the shows have been pretty good, and I hope you're out there sharing them with people, because we do not exist if it isn't for our audience donating on Patreon, sharing the show, and just being a great friend of this program. Want to thank whoever sent me this hat. As you all know, I've become a hat guy. Someone sent me this beautiful black hat with the libertarian porcupine on it. It looks great. It's a very nice hat, and I'm wearing it on the show. It did not come with a tag who sent it, but if you sent it to me, please let me know. Hit me up, and I appreciate you sending it, and that is what I am modeling for tonight. All right, so before we jump into the headlines of the week, let's start with Dear Leader's mailbox. Now, we've been remiss in, I got to inbox zero, I cleared everything out, I have no emails in any of my email boxes, and that includes the We Are Libertarians email box, so I have prepared all of the emails that you've sent me for Dear Leader letters. Now, as you know, Harry's a very successful man, you all respect Harry a lot, y'all might respect me a little bit, but Dear Leader nonetheless is very successful, very handsome, and loves to give advice. You can write about politics, romance. I love to teach. So this is about racism, Harry. So we have to do this one, this episode. So this is from one of our best friends, Lisa Crosby. She writes, "Hello from Miami. I have a serious question for Wall, but I mainly think my question is going to be best answered by Harry." Well, that seems like profiling.
Yep.
"Today I brought my surgery center coworkers all a little something for their desk for Halloween. One of the Haitian ladies pointed out that I bought her a white ghost this year and I bought her a white ghost last year, so I must be racist. I don't understand. Ghosts are not black, so how can I be racist buying a white one? I told her I was not racist, and to prove it, I was going to ask my black friend in Indiana what he thought about me buying a white ghost 2 years in a row for her. She called me something in Creole, which I think translates to only my silly white girl, or at least that is what she tells me. It could be worse. So anyway, am I racist?" This is a fun new game that we can play. Am I racist? Send us your letters for Harry to answer at editor@wearelibertarians.com. So is Lisa racist?
50%. Being white, naturally racist, all racist. and white ghosts. Yes, they're black ghosts and there's Hispanic ghosts. Just don't give them, you know, just don't make a whole all black ghost that's also racist. No, you're not racist. They're Haitians, so just be careful. This is the one group of people who did kill a lot of white people on an island, so just be very careful. If everyone don't know about the Haitian uprising, it's really, really cool movie, 1804. Like, watch it. It's a really cool documentary. You can get it. But no, you're not racist for that. Someone just seeing something into it, yeah, that they wanted to. Because, like I said, they're ghosts. Ghosts don't exist. And if they did, ghosts don't exist. That's my brain goes, and it's just
they
a
do
fun,
to Haitians, man.
They're bone and goofy, and you know what? All bones are white. You know, that's,
your bones white?
Man, my bones are white. They're heavier than yours, but they're white.
Which a lot of our listeners found out that black privilege of yours with heavy bones is not fair, Harry.
That's why I sink. That's why I don't swim.
You don't swim for other reasons. Haitians, poor shout out to Haitians. Half a million are being sent back by the Trump administration after the earthquake in 2010. Mm-hmm. They were granted asylum here, and they are being sent back.
Which is awful. Haitians are very hardworking and great people. I wish we could keep them.
I don't like witches, so I'm just kidding. I don't really care. All right. I told you that this would be a sex-free episode, sex scandal-free, mostly. But I feel like we need to talk about John Conyers, and because I found this interesting for his response, which I want to read a little bit of that to you. But it sounds like it's going to be more serious, as we said in previous episodes. You have to check your political bias at the door and treat each one of these accusations mm-hmm. like you're searching for the truth and not for whataboutism, which is, well, what about Bill Clinton? Well, what about Al Franken? Well, what about Roy Moore? Like, check your whataboutism. So John Conyers, ancient Democrat from Michigan, he serves in the Detroit area. He's just super old at this point. He came out, he was BuzzFeed News, came out with the accusation. Now, here's the funny thing, and here's why I think this is interesting. Mike Cernovich, who some of you may or may not know, he's associated with Alex Jones, and some would call him a conspiracy theorist journalist, some would call him an alt-right journalist, some would call him a truth teller. It depends on what your shade of conspiracy level is. Galt loves him. I think he's funny, and I think he has an interesting point of view, but I think you take it with a grain of salt like you do every single reporter out there, including the show. He is the one who fed this to BuzzFeed. Now, I think this could be an interesting partnership. People like in the Alex Jones alt-right world are not going to be taken seriously as media figures, but what if they start partnering with people like BuzzFeed News who have a left bent to start exposing some of these people? So, Cernovich is the one who basically fed this to BuzzFeed, and he was the source of the big scoop from BuzzFeed Monday night that John Conyers has made repeated sexual advances towards female staffers and secretly reached a financial settlement with one accuser. The story was based largely on documents and affidavits supplied by Cernovich to BuzzFeed's reporters. It's odd. It's something like Michael Moore dropping damning info about the president to Fox News. So it is, at 60 Minutes called Cernovich, a magnet for readers with a taste for stories that have no basis in fact. Take with that what you will. Cernovich acquired the congressional documents after he offered to pay $10,000 for them. The offer was made in a series of now-deleted tweets last week. "I will pay $10,000 for details of these settlements, cash or Bitcoin or check or whatever you want," he tweeted, and somebody produced them. So he took them to, he didn't say if he actually paid anyone or not. He's Ben Smith Tuesday after the story broke said he was unaware of that, saying BuzzFeed, a bastion of journalistic integrity, would never pay for information. right?
I couldn't hold it.
No, please don't. It's ridiculous. But it is, they were extremely careful. This is not like Watergate, but we did our due diligence. So he didn't, Cernovich wouldn't say who his source was. But I think that's an interesting connection. And I think that's not something that you may have heard about and might not get covered. But I think that could be an interesting vehicle for some of these people who are on the far right, just as on the far left, people who have access to information and are anti-government but necessarily won't partner with a Washington Post. You know, like, there may be some truth to Alex Jones saying, I've got sources at the highest levels, I've got the documents. There may be some of that.
Yeah. Well, like, I think there is, because sometimes he just kind of calls it. I'm not saying he calls it all the time, because he connects the dots to things that, you know, he makes a lot of jumps in, you know, of connecting dots. But do people listen to his show, and do people, and people like him in different powers of government? Yeah, I can believe that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, people listen to his show, like, especially people who are up at, I'm shocked, the more people I know that listen to him are the people who work third shift.
Mm-hmm.
I found a lot of IT people that listen to Alex Jones, especially third shifters. They're like, oh, I love Alex Jones.
Why?
I don't know. They like listening to him. So if they see something weird, they're probably like, oh, I saw this on the network the other day, you know?
And interesting.
So he probably does got sources like that in weird different spots. Or the reason I can notice him in like a networking guys and stuff like that is because that's who I hang out with.
Hmm. So. Interesting. Yeah. I love Alex Jones. I think he's hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. A little Alex Jones chill. I like, you know, sitting playing video games and listening to Alex Jones. It's hilarious.
He's the greatest unintentional comedian of all time. Like, you don't have to believe in what he says to, like, just listen to him, because it is hilarious. I mean, it's funny stuff.
I'm going to blare that. I'm blaring nothing but Alex Jones on the way to Lancaster. It's easier that
way. All right. So about the BuzzFeed Conyers story. Basically, BuzzFeed on Monday night said Conyers had this allegation against him. And I only bring this up because I wanted to break from all the sex scandal news, and I'm sure you do too. I wanted to talk about real stuff that's happening in the world tonight. But this is real stuff, because listen to this. Conyers claims that at the time of the settlement, he denied the claims at the time with the settlement. There's really not much information out there, just that this happened, and which made it kind of dubious. So Conyers said, my office resolved the allegations with an express denial of liability in order to save all involved from the rigors of protracted litigation. That should not be lost in the narrative, Conyers said. Let me just skip down to the actual statement or read the whole thing, because he clearly didn't write it. He's too old to write this well, but I thought it was really well written. I have long been and continue to be a fierce advocate for equality in the workplace, and I fully support the rights of employees who believe they have been harassed or discriminated against to assert claims against their employers. That said, it is important to recognize that the mere making of an allegation does not mean it is true. The process must be fair to both the employee and the accused. The current media environment is bringing much-needed focus to the important issue of preventing harassment in workplaces across the country. However, equally important to keep in mind is, in this particular moment, is the principle of due process, and those accused of wrongdoing are presumed innocent unless and until an investigation establishes otherwise. In our country, we strive to honor this fundamental principle that all are entitled to due process. In this case, I expressly and vehemently denied the allegations made against me and continue to do so. My office resolved the allegations with the express denial of liability in order to save all involved from the rigors of protracted litigation. That should not be lost in the narrative. The resolution was not for millions of dollars, but rather an amount that equaled to a reasonable severance payment. There are statutory requirements of confidentiality that apply to both the employee and me in regard to this matter. To the extent the House determines to look further at these issues, I will fully comply with an investigation. Now, a person involved in the case, which went through the Office of Compliance, which has a secret mechanism by which Congress has kept an unknown number of sexual harassment allegations quiet, said it actually reached a point where he did know. I think that's if Roy Moore had given this statement, mm-hmm. it probably would have ended a lot of it, because, like, I like I've said in past episodes, I've worked with a lot of rich, powerful men, and they, a lot of those guys are like Mike Pence. You know, you probably heard the Mike Pence rule.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it basically follows Billy Graham's Modesto Manifesto, which one of the tenets of that was never be alone in a room with a woman, never put yourself in a position where your integrity could be questioned, mm-hmm. you know, because it's respectful to your wife. It's something that I followed when I was married, partly because my wife was insecure and I just wanted to be respectful, and I didn't want the hassle. I didn't want her going through stuff. I didn't want to involve. It just was easier, and you don't have to be alone with a woman. Like, you just don't. And, you know, a coworker today said, like, to take that one step further, like, would you ever say or do something to a female coworker or a male coworker that you wouldn't do in front of your spouse, girlfriend, wife, husband? Like, if you wouldn't do it in front of your grandma, don't do it at work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, pretty much.
Right.
Unless you have a really crazy grandma.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that seems to be fair, but it's amazing to me how many, like, I posted this on Facebook and immediately a bunch of liberal-leaning women on my Facebook wall, well, he just can't keep his dick in the pants. He just thinks that women are predators and that he's a predator and he just needs to, like, no, that's not what the basic concept of respect amounts to.
Right.
Like, it's, you just can't win. Like, you can't seem to win. And these rich, powerful guys just don't, a lot of them don't put themselves in these positions because I've worked with people that have been sued just because they have money.
Correct, yeah. A lot of them, like, they're like, hey, let me go grab my lawyer about this. This right. is a really good situation. Let me go grab my lawyer. You know, or they don't buy anything because it was the same thing with during elections, right? Mm-hmm. Where the person's running the candidate never drives their car. They don't buy anything. Mm-hmm. They don't do any of that anymore. You know, you try to keep them separated from that stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, it. And those simple rules, it just makes things easier. I even remember, like, in my health, like I said, like my high school health class, the teacher told us never, ever, ever be alone with a woman in your dorm room.
Right.
Don't do it. It's not that. And she also added the racist remark, especially if she's a white woman, don't do that.
Yeah, here's the problem. Like, the 10-20% of guys that are the predators, that are the scumbags, mm-hmm. ruin it for the other 80% of guys and 100% of women. Like, it's in this current climate, the climate denies women opportunity, because as there's benefits and cons to this. Like, the cons are some employers may choose to favor a male candidate for an internship or an employment opportunity over a female candidate because they don't want the extra stress, because what women have to understand is that in a workplace environment now, and it like, not just now, but really, like, the last 10 years, if I have a female coworker sexually harassing me and I go to HR and introduce that, I get laughed at. A female coworker has the power to have any of us fired based on allegations.
Yes.
Like, it doesn't have to be true, and that's a power that ought to be wielded responsibly, should be taken seriously, because women should be taken seriously when there are allegations.
Correct, yeah.
Because the chances of sexual abuse or sexual harassment being true is probably on their side. Like, I would say that there are far more, it's not, I wouldn't say, there are way more people who are sexually harassed or assaulted versus the mattress girl. Like, there's just way more in the other spectrum, but from a male perspective, it does make you, in the back of your mind, rethink every interaction that you have with female coworkers.
Yeah, and I really don't want to jump into this topic. I thought we were going to stay away from this stuff.
We're close to getting out of it, I promise.
I just thought we were going to stay out of it. But I see what you're talking about, that because a lot of the times, like, those people in power don't really see their power.
Yeah.
And I also get it from the women's perspective, because it puts them in a situation that they, you know, they don't know what to expect. You know?
Absolutely.
And try to almost, like, put the onus on them, you know, that, you know, you've got to do this, you know, like, as a crap, now I've got to deal with this guy,
Let me say, can you put it brilliantly? Like, it wasn't a question to them. It was a predicament.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that. And it gets, you know, and I can kind of get it. There's a several different times for a while I went until like Lacey really got used to the creepitarian aspect of different liberty spaces that she would just hang around me, and I couldn't understand, like, why is she sitting there hanging out with me? I'm just sitting there jamming on a keyboard with a bunch of other nerds. We're just sitting there like doing things on it, and I'm trying to make my pineapple do different stuff to like show it off and show different people and discuss and like do all this information, and she would just sit there just dotingly the first few years until I realized, and she, you know, basically came to me and was like, no, it's the freaking creepitarians, because there's a lot of the guys that will you know, like, want to hang out, but you know, but they're only really there for one reason, and it creeped her out, and so it just, she just, you know, it was just easier if she just hung around me.
All right, now before we all stand up and say Conyers Standing Up for Men came out tonight just before the program, as I was prepping about an hour before. BuzzFeed reports a former schedule in Conyers' office said she was the victim of unwanted touching repeatedly and daily. She was not part of the harassment, which makes her a second victim. That settlement was made in 2015. The victim of the new incident sued Conyers for over $100,000, but later withdrew the lawsuit after the court denied her request to keep the complaint private. Now she's going public. She described daily harassment from Conyers, who's like 90, from May to July 2016, including rubbing her shoulders, kissing her forehead, covering and attempting to hold her hand, and more. She said this caused insomnia, anxiety, depression, and chest pains, all of which I buy, because, like, if your workplace is hostile like that, that's stressful.
Yeah.
And it was all made worse after Kanye's wife, Monica, called her a whore. The staffer eventually became so unwell, she attempted to take sick leave and was fired after Kanye's chief of staff demanded proof that she was sick. Man. So, that there's that.
Yeah.
So, now, final thought on this. The Axios website, AXIOS, one of the founders is Mike Allen, formerly of the Politico Playbook. That was like the must-read thing that everybody in the swamp read. Mike Allen is like the foremost gossip, like verifiable gossip monger in the city. Somebody, if you want to know what's going on in the swamp, go to Axios.com, get their daily emails. He reported, members of Congress with histories of mistreating women should be extremely nervous. Major outlets, including CNN, are dedicating substantial newsroom resources to investigating sexual harassment allegations against numerous lawmakers. A Republican source told me he's gotten calls from a well-known D.C. reporter who are gathering stories about sleazy members.
Uh-oh.
Veronica DeRuggi, I'm sorry, from Reason, on their Reason podcast, said, I have two steak dinners on several congressmen, so look for that to come out. Now, now on the show prep order today, Men's Day is on here. Can you explain what Men's Day is?
International Men's Day was this past Sunday. International Men's Day was a day, like, every time, like, you know, like, it's a day meant for talk about and discuss men's issue. It was a day that, you know, some people don't like discussing or bringing up International Men's Day because they believe that every day is International Men's Day, which that is incorrect. But this is the day is for bringing about and talking about men's issue, like male suicide, fatherhood abandonment, not having their children with him, and not getting custody and custody battles, because a lot of the different times when it comes down to it, like, a lot of fathers, they want 50-50 custody. That's not the case. They usually get every other weekend, so they're basically seeing their kids, what is it, I want to say what, like, the math is on that, was it 40 days a year, which is ridiculous. Some different holidays, and for someone as a and if you see your kid, you're used to seeing your kids every day. Like, right now, I get to see Gunther every day, and I'm able to see her like once a weekend, like every other weekend. That would tear me apart. And you can understand these different men, the different males' issue. And the main reason I brought it up, because it went by. Most people never notice that it's National Men's Day. Mm-hmm. When it's International Women's Day, it's a big thing. People are talking about it. It's everywhere. But on International Men's Day, that Sunday, you were supposed to wear blue to, like, talk about the situation and bring it up. I wore blue. Some people didn't really notice. I did try to talk to some people. The other thing that was also really cool, which I didn't really notice and didn't really think about even looking at when I was listening to the Honey Badger Radio podcast, and they were talking about how Google usually does a doodle, the Google Doodle. For they did one for National Women's Day. They do like, for these, all these dinkin' holidays. It was a the basic Google freaking doodle that day. No International Men's Day thing for that one. So when International Women's Day does happen, and you see how much of a big deal it is, and how everywhere, and everyone gets to talk about it. You know, when it went past, almost like, you know, no one even noticed it on the Sunday, especially it's football day, just game day, all these things. Like, you know, no one changed their cleats. No one put on ribbons. There were no parades. It's kind of just went by. And it just kind of just, it's a great way to, it's not great. It just shows you, like, a lot of male disposability. And that's, like, a huge, massive problem. I know I'm not the best one to talk about these issues. I am fully aware and am informed on a lot of these issues. That's another reason why I wanted to bring Terrence Pop on the show, so he can give a huge better perspective. He actually have been chewed up a lot of by this system, and has experienced a lot of, like, you know, this way the system does beat you up. And from being a military vet, he understands... I feel like he sees the male suicide rate that like almost firsthand. So
yeah,
that would be a better thing for him. Like, I can sit here and talk about it, but trust me, when we get him on here, it's going, you know, that guy will be able to share like more personal story. Him and Blake. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. I am unfamiliar with Terrence Pop, but Harry has been enlightening me. And if you're a Terrence Pop fan and a Wall fan, tweet at him.
Yeah.
Say, hey, make sure you get your butt on Wall.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to try to get him on back. Get him in here. Get him on here. We because I really do want him on. The other thing that went by. Oh, sorry.
Keep going. No, you're fine.
Sure.
Go ahead.
You know, didn't want to like coup the show. Already. No. the other thing I like the thing
we have taken over.
I have taken. I'm dear leader now. Okay. Okay. But the other day that went by was yesterday, the Trans Day of Remembrance. You see all these platitudes a lot of people give about you know, transgender rights, bathrooms, and all these different things this past year and stuff like that, and all this Kendall Jenner thing. But November 20th usually goes by unannounced, and most people. Only people really in the trans community really understand what's going on when it comes to the Day of Remembrance. So this is when people talk about all the people that all the trans people that have lost.
Mm-hmm.
It has gotten better, but it's still like worse. Like, because usually like the Trans Day of Remembrance, we usually did like a candle vigil and go about the different deaths. And it was also harder to find in the past because a lot of news outlets would misgender and dead name a lot of trans people. So getting the name record, to read a name record of all the dead trans people that way, because regardless of what people may think of, like, people are more accepting of a trans so many people are accepting of gays, and people are accepting of different people in other races. For some reason, trans people are still different, are murdered in this country for just being trans.
Right.
Now, are some people murdered in this country for being black? Possibly. Are people murdered in this country for being white? Possibly. But it's more of it's a huge problem in the trans community, and not only for being murdered, also the suicide rate in the trans community. Also, a lot of that has to do with substance abuse, people, family members not accepting them who they are, living out on the streets. It's a very hard situation in this country to be trans. It's not a good situation for a lot of people because there's a lot of different things that are going on with their body, or going on with their inside their mental health, and a lot of people they try to understand, they don't understand it, and it's very hard for them, and it's because like even it's like, well, like getting a job, they have to worry about, you know, being dead named, misgendered. It's so like the day.
Explain,
I remember,
dead named.
Dead naming is when you would use someone's old name. I always hate it. I'm not going to do it. Like, I'm just going to create. I'm creating a fake person, a fictional person right now. Let's say with an FTM, a female to male transsexual, their original name. Let's go with Stephanie, and they and their new name, their real name, they've given themselves. Let's say it's David,
mm-hmm.
and people would still call them Stephanie.
Sure,
dead naming them. And that would still happen when they would go with life, like any background checks and stuff like that. That dead naming, bringing that name back up, which also, you know, it can also can trigger dysphoric events. So
sure, we had a castmate, Maya Action. Some of you may remember, and episode 3, 2 or 3, Jeremiah was on, and then somewhere in between then, she transitioned to Maya, and we did a podcast called Creating Maya, which you can hear on our SoundCloud page on our archive. You can find it, just go to SoundCloud and Google We Are Libertarians. You can hear the whole 20-episode thing, but part of the, there's another podcast that we have in your RSS, if you Google in iTunes or whatever, look in iTunes for the cost. One of those episodes is Maya's story, where Maya was at a particular moment in her experience where she was looking at committing suicide because it was so tough. And Maya and I don't talk anymore because that's, she's a difficult person. But I really do feel for people who have that thing in their life. Like it just was. And as close as Maya and I were, I would still constantly use the wrong pronoun. It was unintentional, and you know, she was forgiving of that. But I mean, it is. So you can kind of hear our journey. My journey as her friend, and her journey as a trans male to female trans person in that. And if you're curious, so go and check it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's what it's like, and yeah, and that's what, you know, November 20th is about. It's just about just like remembering and just giving support to people of the trans community that committed suicide or were just like murdered in this country.
Yeah.
And it's still sad that it does happen, that people are like, just for someone living their life how they are, not hurting anyone, and getting murdered for it. It's awful.
Yeah. I mean, just on a human level, you don't have to understand it. You don't have to even approve of it, but like, on a human level, you like, they deserve dignity and respect, mm-hmm. and love, and yeah, it's a tough thing. So, all right, now let's move on to the tax bill. The House passed a tax bill. It was, let's see, on all my show prep here, 227-205, with a handful of Republicans from blue states joining the opposition. The House plans to cut taxes by roughly $1.5 trillion over the next decade, with tax reductions for both businesses and individuals. The plan would slash the corporate tax rate from 35% down to 20% and would condense the current 7 individual tax brackets into 4, while expanding the child tax credit and doubling the standard deduction. The lower corporate tax rate would be a permanent change. This is from Reason, by the way. This is Peter Sudeman. House Republicans just passed a major tax reform bill. The lower corporate tax rate would be a permanent change. However, a new $300 tax credit, dubbed the Family Flexibility Credit, is intended to help middle class folks. It would expire in 2023, leading one analysis to find that after the year, only 40% of Americans would pay a lower taxes under this plan, and only 22% would pay more. So it reduces or eliminates many major deductions, including carve-outs for medical expenses, cars, moving, tax preparation, student loan interest. The plan gets rid of the state and local tax deduction, or SALT, as you might have heard, for income and sales tax. That would be eliminated, and caps the deduction for property taxes. So you're getting an increase in your overall write-off, but they're getting rid of a lot of those deductions. And the reason that they did that is they had the goal of making, you know, putting your tax return on a postcard,
yeah,
which they're not going to meet that goal, but they,
it's a good step.
Yeah. But these tax credits that you can write off really are just favors for special interest groups, or they're little nuggets to try and nudge people into doing certain things and behaviors. And so I support them getting rid of it. But some of the things like the student loan interest, you've got some students who are going to end up paying taxes on their student loans as if they're making $75,000 that year, which, you know, the standard deduction may not overcome. So some of that is going to be difficult. So, but that's part of the pain. If you're going to try and simplify the tax code, you're going to have to get rid of the deductions and the exemptions, and you're going to piss people off, and I think they probably knew that going into it. The biggest benefit is residents of high-income, high-tax states that tend to vote Democratic, hence the handful of blue state it's not a benefit. Basically, I don't know what he's talking about here. Maybe I'm reading it wrong. Basically, by removing, you can write off your state and local taxes, your previous year's taxes, and you also can deduct your mortgage payments. Mm-hmm. So they made a calculation. And they said, listen, we're going to piss people off. And because we're doing it through a process called budget reconciliation, which I will explain in a moment, they have to meet a certain goal. It basically has to be revenue neutral. This tax bill essentially had to spend no more than it's like, if you're cutting taxes the way that Washington works, like to you and I, if you're cutting taxes, we get to keep more of our money. But to the government, they're bringing in just less money, right? Mm-hmm. Republicans would argue that like something like the permanent corporate tax cut, where you're going from 35% down to 20%, which was an arbitrary number. Basically, they said, well, some European countries are 21%, so we'll get lower than them and go to 20%. Still not like the 12% of Ireland. But that corporate tax rate is going to bring jobs here. It's going to create more jobs, which creates more taxpayers, which creates more growth. And so over time, you're projected to get revenue neutral. There are a lot of people like Ron Johnson, Bob Corker, who are saying no to this because it increases the budget deficit by $1.5 trillion over the course of the next 10 years. And some of the arguments opposed to that are like, yes, right now in these numbers, but eventually it's going to pay for itself in economic growth. So it really comes down to a few questions, some more details before I go into some of this. Heritage Foundation put together a handy chart here, and I've linked this in the We Are Libertarians group. You can search Wall News and find the link for this, but it's comparing the House and Senate tax bills and individual tax rates. There's currently 7 brackets. The House takes it to 4 brackets. The Senate bill is 7 brackets still. And basically what's going to happen is the House has passed their bill. The Senate has introduced their version. The Senate will haggle over this. And then they will go to budget reconciliation. And they will then both the Senate and the House will have to vote again on the final bill. So they will take the House version, the Senate bill, mash it together, then both houses vote on it again. I'll explain why later. So the Senate bill is 7 brackets. The standard deduction right now for single people is $6,350, married people, $12,700. Under both the House and Senate bill, it's $12,000 for single, $24,000 for married. All right, so it's effectively doubling in both cases. The income or sales property taxes are fully deductibilized right now. So you can take your state and local property taxes and deduct them. Mm. House repeals SALT deduction for income, sales tax caps, property tax deduction at $10,000. The Senate bill repeals full SALT deduction. Now, they are punching blue states in the face. But they're making a calculation that somebody who lives in a blue state, the majority of them are not going to vote for them anyways.
Right.
The polarizing effect of that is that when the states have to make it up, who do you think they're going to punish? Like a state like California, they're going to craft tax policy that takes it right out of the red area's pockets, essentially.
It's, you know, okay. Most people are leaving California anyways.
Yeah.
So like this, so you can deduct your property taxes?
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to everyone out in New Hampshire with those high property taxes.
Right. Now, pass-through corporations, I don't know if I'm a pass-through corporate. Like, basically, Wall is me and I am Wall. And so I claim all that Patreon money that you guys donate, I put on my taxes. And then I write off some of the equipment costs and stuff like that. So I essentially put all on my personal income taxes because I'm not an LLC yet, although I'm doing that soon. So it's that pass-through tax treatment. There's currently pass-through income taxed at personal income tax rates. Under the House bill, maximum rate capped at 25%. Then there's a bunch of other stuff. For the Senate bill, deduction allowed for 17.4%. So they're going to give a little bit of those pass-through folks a break. Right now, the corporate tax rate is 35%. Both the House and Senate want to make it a permanent rate of 20% in 2019. This is really the important thing. This is the part that they all agree on, that this is the thing that has to be done. and they are willing to give up anything to get it done. Expensing, right now it's complicated rules. House bill, 5 years of expensing for new equipment. Same with the Senate. Child tax credit, currently $1,000 for each child. Phased out at $110,000 combined if you're married. It would be a $1,600 credit, $300 credit for each parent and non-child dependents, $1,650 with a $500 credit in the Senate bill. There's an international tax rule where the Trump administration tried to write in something where they were going to penalize, you know, basically investments going overseas, and that got taken out in the Senate bill because multinational corporations screamed bloody murder. So Obamacare tax is 3.8% net investment income tax. That has not been changed. Reparation tax. I don't know what this is. Harry, you're getting a tax break.
Yeah. pay back those reparations.
And then the estate tax, 40% tax on assets over $5.49 million per person, immediately doubles the basic exclusion, repeals the tax after 2024. In the Senate, they don't repeal the tax. So those are some of the facts if you're a true nerd. Tax Foundation has a great document on it. There's a lot of good stuff out there on this. Mm-hmm. Ron Paul... And it really comes down to a few questions. I'll get to Ron in a second. But so as I was kind of thinking about this morning, I wrote down a few questions. The first question you have to ask is, do you care about Republicans? I personally don't care about Republicans. But if you are a Republican that listens, you probably do care about Republicans. Harry, I don't know. Do you care about Republicans?
I don't care about Republicans.
All right. So
parties are empty vessels.
Exactly. So the Republican Party essentially needs to get something done. Like they, you know, this headline from the Washington Post, Republicans cite donor pressure to deliver on tax bill. And Republican Representative Chris Collins of New York said, my donors are basically saying, get it done or don't ever call me again. So that's pretty intense. And the pressure is on the Republicans to do anything because they haven't done anything.
Savage.
And you know, like Lindsey Graham basically said, if Republicans can't agree and pass tax care or tax reform, mm-hmm. when you've got the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and the Supreme Court, like, what good are you?
Right.
Great point, Lindsey. Mm-hmm. It's the first time we've ever agreed on anything.
I know, which is weird.
Right. Like, and it's so true. So the corporate tax rate is the thing that they're really all hanging their hats on. So the Republicans have to get this done, and they're not doing it like... This bill is crafted to help the rich and the and corporations.
Landowners.
Landowners, too. Like, it's really, if you're in the middle class or the lower class, you're not going to really see any tax relief. You're not going to see any benefit, but except for maybe lower prices in goods.
Yeah.
Because explain business taxes.
Well, like, if you're... Mostly middle, upper class. Most of those small business owners that are middle class, you will see a break from this. Especially the upper middle class, people are breaking up through that. Or the lower middle class will see that because a lot of those are landowners, that first generation of trying to get to them. So a lot of people who still got their houses from the during the housing crisis, who bought land or have multiple houses like that pays a lot of property taxes.
Right.
Those help those people out, or people who are businesses or are struggling because if they could deduct that property tax, you know, they've got more money to hire more people and be able to do different things.
Exactly.
When you first read that, I think of the property taxes, I started cracking up laughing because I remember back here in Indiana, we had a huge problem with property taxes. Mm-hmm. And Abdul said, he's like, mark my words, you guys put this in your constitution and you will rue the day of having these property tax caps. And it looked like it might happen.
Yeah, no, 100%. And so they, you know, 3% for like property that's commercial, 2% for farms, and 1% for homeowners. I may have that backwards, but it's now like they have property tax caps, Prop 13 in California. And so that's why they have high income taxes.
Right.
And so this is really going to screw those people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and Indiana.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, taxes aren't that high here in Indiana, but yeah. Yeah, but if they wanted to switch everything over to property taxes, they can't.
10 years ago, they tripled.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. Well, just
in
like...
In a year, like the property taxes, some people saw a 90% increase in their property taxes. Like one guy that ran for office, Ed Angleton, went from paying $400 a year to $1,500 a year or a month or something crazy. It was just like this outrageous increase. And so he got so pissed he ran for office.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's... Yeah, don't get me wrong. It's like the caps are nice because they jumped it off. A lot of people have lost their house because they couldn't pay the taxes on it.
Yeah,
you know, granted, it got fixed, but you know, so what? Your house was gone in a tax sale.
Yeah, and that's states can't just inflate money. And so, like in Indiana, they got rid of the inventory tax because Mitch Daniels came in and said it's stupid. The business owners don't want to pay inventory on pencils. So they got rid of the inventory tax. Well, lo and behold, that's what rose property taxes because local agencies just started raising taxes. Mm-hmm. And so then they had to fix that. And so then you had income tax increases in all the counties, what were called COIT taxes, county option income tax, where a county could choose to impose an income tax. And so then you had counties, and now you see kind of a diaspora even further out into the boondocks from these counties because people don't want to pay that COIT tax. Yeah. So every time, and you look at Kansas is a state that didn't cut spending and then cut taxes and then had a major budget crisis that cost Sam Brownback his governorship, essentially. And Kansas has had an absolute crazy time with their budget because they don't have the power just to inflate their money.
Right. Yeah. It's nuts. But like the whole inventory tax here in Indiana, that was basically you pay taxes on the things that you had here on your inventory.
Right.
So like if you were like a business, as you was getting down to the end of the year, you were just like, nope, we're going to do that till we run out. And it was like nuts being here in Indiana because everything's got to go.
I would have to archive and like every like this stand. Okay. Well, I bought this for $35. It now is worth 10. What could I sell this for? That microphone's 100.
Yeah, gotta get rid of it.
Right.
Yeah, car dealerships are just getting rid of cars, or they just wouldn't. Or you would have the issue that they just wouldn't have the cars in the lot. Like, yes, we can give you that car. I'll give you a $2,000 discount, but you got to wait till the next year.
Yeah.
You know, which was nuts. Like, I remember when I bought my first car, went to there, and my dad was looking at a car. We was able to get both those cars for like $3,000 off each because it was the end of the year for property inventory tax. Just take these cars. Take them. Because they would have paid more on the freaking taxes. They just wanted them gone.
Yeah.
You know, they'll make it back on the payments.
So Republicans have to get this done because they will start to – business owners will start to feel the effects – right around the primaries next year and start to see economic benefit around the elections. And if they don't do this, they're not going to have the money to compete with Democrats next year. A lot of these rural Republican-held districts flipped to Democrats in Virginia. And there's no doubt that Republicans are going to lose Senate and House seats, and they're possibly going to lose the House to the Democrats next November. And if that happens, then they're really out of luck. Like the impeachment proceedings are going to start with Trump, and that's just going to occupy all of our time. So like this is their one shot to get anything done, any major piece of legislation done. And so a permanent corporate tax cut, I'm okay with. If you care about Republicans, they need to get this done. And Trump needs the win. And so he's trying to get a win at any cost, essentially.
Yeah.
Do you care about yourself? If you're fine with the amount of taxes that you pay, I would imagine that looking at our analytics, most of the people that listen to us are working to middle class. I'm somewhere in between myself. And I don't really think about all the taxes that I pay until I pay my taxes and tally it all up and go, holy shit. So I would love to pay less taxes. I'm not getting anything out of this bill. Like, I'm going to get, like, $300 back. Like, I may get a better tax return check, but I'm really – because I don't take a lot of deductions. So I may see some benefit from this come tax return time because of that increased deduction. But by and large, most people are not really going to see a change in their taxes. And unless you're very wealthy because of the inheritance tax being killed off – or a small, if you're a business owner, especially a large business owner or a pass-through business, people like Donald Trump and Donald Trump himself stand to benefit tremendously from this bill. Which, do you care about rich people getting their taxes cut? If you don't want rich people to have their taxes cut, then you're not going to like this bill. If you don't really care, like me, because I look at it and go, well, I really don't care that three people have the same amount of wealth as the bottom 30% of the population. Like, Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, and Warren Buffett built stuff.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me, but it may bother some of you.
Yeah, but the thing, the people that they that bothers them, that they believe that that money is going to sit in some sort of vault and they're going to Scrooge McDuck it.
Right. You know? Right. They're swimming in their... Scrooge McDuck, if he jumped into those coins, would break his neck.
Yes, he would. Yes, he would.
Bullshit. Do you care about deficits? A lot of our audience does care about deficits. And this is a really bad bill if you care about deficits, because it's going to add $1.5 trillion in deficits. And, you know, I'm looking at several headlines. Matt Welch, tax reform and the deficit, 1.7 quadrillion pennies and growing by the minute. Basically, it's not going to be a fiscally responsible bill. Matt Welch is against this bill, and if I'm interpreting him correctly and what I've heard him speak about and write about, the Senate is less fiscally conservative than the House. And every day there's media scrutiny and eroding poll numbers, they start eroding some of the parts that make this financially viable, like the individual mandate, which we'll get to. You know, Matt Welch wrote in the LA Times, SALT, which is state and local tax, and the mortgage interest deduction cut are the two biggest fillers of the $4 trillion hole between the $5.5 trillion in tax cuts and projected $1.5 trillion deficit. So caving on that could blow whatever slim chance there is for passage in the Senate. So this is an expensive bill to the debt, the deficit that we're passing on to our kids. Ron Paul... Like, what do you think about that? I mean, are you a debt hawk, a deficit hawk, Harry?
It used to be, but now it's like, man, it's $20 trillion in debt.
Yeah, we're fucked anyways, right?
Unless you're talking about saving trillions, screw it. Smoke it up, light it up. See how high you can crank this thing.
Man, I'm kind of like, I care because it's our biggest problem, but since nobody else cares, it's like, might as well get some tax cuts out of it.
You can't do anything. It's $20 trillion.
We spend more than we bring in.
It's $20 trillion. You can't fathom that number. You never understand that number is so large.
Right.
The only thing you've probably ever seen in the trillions is air particles and sand. You know? Like... They've never even made 20 trillion Legos, okay?
If you're speaking in Legos, I get it.
Yeah, you know, can you imagine 20 trillion little Lego pieces?
No.
Fathers around the world,
you
cringe.
You couldn't walk anywhere. Ron Paul, for his part, at Mises.org, wrote, GOP tax plan increases the most insidious tax. You're not going to believe this, but... Ron Paul wrote about auditing the Fed and inflation as a counter to this bill. The Republican tax cut plan has some positive elements, such as increasing the standard deduction, creating a new family tax credit, eliminating the death tax, reducing the corporate tax rate, and lowering taxes on small businesses. It also has some flaws, such as the millionaire surcharge imposed on upper-income taxpayers. This provision reflects a belief that upper-income taxpayer only deserve a tax break if reducing their taxes serve the interest of the government by increasing economic growth. The worst part of the tax plan is that it adopts the chained consumer price index. Chained CPI is a way of measuring CPI that understates inflation's effects on our standard of living. It does this by assuming inflation has not reduced American standard of living. For example, if people now buy hamburger and can no longer afford steak, the so-called full substitution ignores the fact that if individuals viewed hamburger as a full substitute for steak, they would have bought hamburgers before Fed created inflation made steak unaffordable. Now, I personally prefer hamburger to steak, but I'm a plebe.
You are a plebe.
Right. I know you. And listen, I wasn't going to bust your balls, but you're drinking Kroger brand seltzer water.
Yeah, I had a cut.
That is not Perrier.
I know. Yeah, I went back to the I went to the Kroger brand, try it out, see if it's close. It's close, but it just doesn't get that same pop, that same bite.
You were slumming it.
Yeah. I want, and it was on sale, you know. I used the Kroger Plus card. I had to crank up the numbers because with gas prices getting so high, I needed to get cheaper gas for the RX-8. So
right. Paul continues, chain CPI increases the inflation tax. The inflation tax may be the worst of all taxes because it is hidden and regressive. The inflation tax is not even a tax on real wages. Instead, it is a tax on the illusionary gains and income caused by inflation. The use of chain CPI to adjust tax brackets pushes individual into higher tax brackets over time. So we had to make sure that we got the good doctor in. Now you've got what up?
Oh, I'm just...
You can't see it on the camera, so you'll have to explain it.
Oh, just show the national debt clock. Just watch it. It's like, I mean, I haven't seen this in years. Oh, man. I remember when I said four.
I know.
Remember when I said four?
I know. Libertarians were on the debt clock website. What is the URL?
USdebtclock.org. Yeah, you could... Man, I remember that was so small. Now look at it. That's not even reasonable anymore.
Yeah. So you have to understand, this is tax reform, not tax relief. And essentially, what they're doing is they're just shuffling the tax burdens around. They're not really cutting taxes. They're not giving us relief. They're just kind of shuffling things around to make it simpler.
Yeah.
And it's who got to the barrel first. Ryan McCacken at Mises.org. Hey, GOP, want to cut the burden of government? Cut spending. Tax reform is really about which interest groups can modify the current tax code to better suit their parochial interests. The end result is not a lessened tax burden overall, and thus doing nothing to boost real savings, real wealth creation, or real economic growth. So the Mises crowd is firmly against the tax bill, and I can't say I blame them, because if you're a deficit hawk, this does nothing to cut spending, and it adds $1.5 trillion to the deficit.
Less than 1%.
Right. Right.
It's less than 1% of the debt. Meh. Less than 1%.
Right. So if you're one of the lucky ones, you're getting a little bit. This article by Ryan McCacken. Hey, GOP, want to cut the burden of government? Cut spending. You can find it at Mises. It's really a great article. I'm not going to go through it because there's so much in here that's so good and so right on that I just wanted to bring it to your attention for you to go check out, Google that. Hey, GOP, want to cut the burden of government? Cut spending. And share that with your friends, because it really, if you're a deficit hawk, that's a great perspective, a well-written article. So do you live in a blue state? If you live in a blue state, you're really pissed right now, because you're taking your super high taxes that you could write off, your state and local taxes, and you could write all that stuff off. Now you can't. Now, if you're in California or New York, your increase in standard deduction, that is probably not going to cover the doubling of your standard deduction. So if you're in a blue state, you're hosed. But they don't care about you because they're Republicans.
Right. You're not going to vote for them.
Which is part of the problem of this entire system.
Mm-hmm.
We've now set up a hyper-partisan system thanks to gerrymandering and the election rigging in state assemblies and state legislative bodies by making sure that we have this hyper-partisan system so our team wins. But what we now have is you have these massive, crazy bills where you have one or two a year that get passed in this budget reconciliation process, and these bills are 1,000 pages long. They're passing less bills. Like in 1996, they passed, or no, it was 1986 when they had the last budget reform. They're passing like 400 bills a year. Now they're passing 200 bills a year, but the pages have gone from like 200 to 1,200. And you have these massive bills that they just cram through that are super partisan that are then undone by the other side. And so the next team that comes in can undo all of this. Right. Like the corporate tax rate's probably set, but like some of these other tax deductions that get sunset, it's like the Patriot Act got sunset. They're making the same argument for pieces of this tax reform where, yeah, these standard deductions, we're going to have to vote on these sunsets again in 10 years, but the Congress in 10 years is not going to let us down and raise taxes. So it's not permanent. We just need to make it a sunset to get this passed, because apparently some of the congressmen and senators don't know how Congress works. But
or they do. They just right. Because either they've been there long enough, or they'd be more secure, or they just do another relief plan when that comes. Right. Or the Congress is a different spot.
Yeah.
And a lot of them who probably put pen to paper for this thing, they're in such concrete districts, like, I'm fine. My district's secure.
Exactly.
I'm a Republican in Kentucky. What are you going to do?
Like, Peter King, who is the worst member of Congress. If you're looking for the worst member of Congress as a libertarian, Peter King is at the top of your list.
Yeah. And I'm beating on a Republican in Congress because everyone beats on Rand.
Well, they're in power now.
Yeah, everyone beats on Rand, so I thought it was acceptable. So,
so the mandate, the individual, so to talk about some of that undoing, part of the stupidity of this bill is... Listen, it's not stupidity because I agree with it, but it's also bad economics, which I don't agree with. And so that's kind of the libertarian burden, is that you've got this thing that they want to do that you go right on, but then when you really look at the math, you go, uh-oh.
Yeah.
And so that's always the problem when you look at Republican economic bills. It's just always like, yeah, that sounds great. And then you go, oh, but the math doesn't work.
Yeah. This doesn't add up.
Yeah, and the repeal of the individual mandate is one of those. So when they passed healthcare, there was something called the three-legged stool. Mm-hmm. And when Obamacare was basically designed to cover people with pre-existing conditions and to lower healthcare premiums, to give more people access to healthcare at a lower cost, and to cover people with pre-existing conditions. It did that one, but it didn't do the other two. And then, so to make that happen, they had to do something in three steps. So they, to cover pre-existing conditions, they had to put in the individual mandate. Because if they didn't force everyone to get health insurance, and then hopefully force everybody into the exchange, then what they were hoping would happen is that people would go into the exchanges. You'd fill so many people in these exchanges that there would be enough money in these pools to cover the cost of those, the price rises. You know, the people who have pre-existing conditions use the most health care. Mm-hmm. Well, young people, like, I didn't have health insurance my entire 20s. I never went to the doctor. And so it would have been a waste of money for me.
It's true.
And if I got in a car accident, I would have been hosed anyways, even 15 years ago. So if you're young and healthy, you're really just transferring your money to the old and sick.
Yeah.
And so they needed that money to transfer to the old and sick, so they had to force everybody into the exchanges. Well, what happened is people took the penalty on their taxes. They didn't buy health insurance, or they went on private insurance plans, or they went on their parents' plans. They didn't go into the exchanges. It didn't force enough people into the exchanges to make the math work.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you ended up happening is the exchanges started collapsing across the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And so the third leg of the three-legged stool is, first, cover pre-existing conditions. Second, individual mandate to force people to buy into the exchanges to cover the cost of the pre-existing conditions. Third, subsidize these healthcare exchanges to keep the insurance companies in the game, because the insurance companies weren't going to play the game if they weren't having their costs covered, which, from a corporate side, you go, well, the government's forcing me to do something. You should have to pay for it. Perfectly logical if I'm a businessman, mm-hmm. if I'm the one running that business. If you're a person that hates health insurance companies, you think that's outrageous. They should just bear the burden of the cost. Well, that's not how economics works.
Yeah.
So the repeal of the individual mandate would leave about 13 million people uninsured over the course of the next, 5 to 8 years. And that would save the American taxpayers around $300 million. So that they need to get rid of the individual mandate to basically get to that $1.5 trillion number, because what they're doing is they're trying to trim all these things and make all this math work to make sure that they only spend $1.5 trillion, because setting out in the budget reconciliation process, the rules were agreed upon that they would add no more than $1.5 trillion to the debt.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to have these certain things removed and added to it to make all this math work. And one of those things is the individual mandate. But then you get certain senators like Rand Paul who say, I'm not voting for this unless the individual mandate's gone. But then you get Murkowski from Alaska going, I'm not voting for this unless the individual mandate's protected. So you're kind of like McConnell and Paul Ryan are playing all these political games to get this to pass. So, but the truth is, if you get rid of the individual mandate, you're going to further collapse. You're going to see about a 10% increase in healthcare costs over the next, and that's on top of what we already were going to see. So when the CBO says you're going to see a 10% cost of increase, you can bet that that's like an 80% increase, because anytime the CBO score gives you a number, mm-hmm. you know that you need to like quadruple, maybe yeah. times that by 10.
Just a little.
Right. And so that's what they're all trying to, the reconciliation process, you have to reach the CBO score, and the math has to work according to the CBO, but the CBO has never been right.
Ever.
They're always wrong.
Yeah. Well, like, that being said, like, most people's insurances went up this month. While they're doing their signing up for this month, I know mine did. Like, I think I was paying, like, around $500 a month for the entire family, but now they want $800 a month.
Right.
It was ridiculous.
No. So this budget reconciliation process, a little bit about this. This is your political glossary for this episode. Where did it come from? It was created in 1974 in a budget law, and its main purpose is to reduce the deficit. This is from Politico, called Reconciliation Explained. Its main purpose is to reduce the deficit. Since it was first used in 1980, there have been 20 reconciliation bills enacted into law and 4 vetoed. Why do it? Budget reconciliation is very attractive because it allows passage of a bill in the Senate with just a simple majority of votes. Republicans hold 52 seats in the Senate, so they could lose 3 votes and still pass the bill. You know, with Mike Pence being the tiebreaker. So it kills off the filibuster, basically, where you have the bill that, you know, 60 votes to move ahead, which to me, like, that's like, to me, that's the way that the government works is 52, a simple majority, not 60. Drawbacks, because it requires just that majority vote, reconciliation can be used to jam through highly partisan and controversial bills that mm-hmm. change policy. An example, the healthcare law. Obamacare was passed through reconciliation.
Right.
There's often disagreement over whether or how the rules of the Senate apply to a reconciliation bill. It could mean life or death for tax reform. One important rule is called the Byrd Rule, named for late Senator Robert C. Byrd, who is a Klansman and a Democrat. And it can kill extraneous items in the bill that some senators might push to include. So that's what budget reconciliation is. So how does it work? The budget that the Congress agrees on would include instructions on reconciliation. These instructions would say Congress needs to make changes in spending and revenue and how much. Committees in the House and Senate debate and vote, and then that is by a set date. And then this is the point when specific programs might be targeted for spending cuts or altered. The budget committee in each chamber then picks up those proposals, bundles them together, and if they come from multiple committees and votes, then that's voted on by the House and Senate. So, it's a complicated process, but hell, what isn't these days, Harry?
Yeah exactly. And, the budget reconciliation process, that's when you got the earful of trying to, like, when they did pass a healthcare law.
Yeah.
Because, it wasn't, it shouldn't have, that's the only way it went through. They had to shove it through.
There was no way that it was going to pass.
Yeah, there's otherwise. No way it was going to make it. And thank goodness that would have happened, but it did anyways, and now healthcare is completely screwed up.
Well, like, the individual mandate's one of the most, it is the most un-American bill in my lifetime, maybe with the exception of
the
Patriot Act and the defense authorization for Afghanistan, which they've used to invade 7 countries. Like, those bills are just, like, to force Americans to buy a private product, to pass a law saying it is illegal to be a human being in the United States without a private product.
Correct.
is just it's the antithesis to our founding and what our Constitution stands for. So it's just the individual mandate, I think, even though the math doesn't work, just on principle, get rid of it.
Yeah.
Like it's un-American.
Yeah. On principle, it doesn't work. Sorry. Get rid of it. Try to make it work. Get your finger out of it.
Right.
Get your finger out of healthcare and watch it flourish.
Right.
Just watch it. Watch it happen. Get your grubby paws out of healthcare like you've done every other time the government has put their fingers in anything. You have ruined everything. Just look at the whole stupid net neutrality thing. Their finger has been in telecoms from the 1900s, and they just have screwed over everything since then.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about net neutrality? Are you prepared?
I can. Yeah, I'm always. I can talk net neutrality all the time.
All right. So the December 10th, I believe they're going to have. They're going to change the internet back to what it was in 2015, according to Creighton Harrington.
Yeah.
He's like, to everybody freaking out over all of this net neutrality, they're just changing the internet back to what it was pre 2015. Which, like, I'm going to be honest, Harry. I don't know shit about net neutrality, and like every time we talk about it, I pretend, and I just like. It's really kind of one of those things where, like, I need you to just tell me what to believe. Like, am I for or against net neutrality? Please explain it to me.
It is a complicated subject for libertarians or anybody, because the simple fact that the biggest problem is the government has so many different regulations in this process, so there's this awful nacho layer dip of crap, and everyone wants regulation off of them so they can use the monopoly that the government has given them to make money off it. Right. So, like, basically, so are the regulations strangleholding a lot of the different companies? Yeah, they sure are. But once you remove this regulation, the government has this other regulation that gives them the monopoly. Because, okay, slow down. Back up.
Right. Okay. Calm yourself. I know you're getting triggered right now.
All right. So, net neutrality, what these rules are designed to do is to make sure the ISP stays neutral and they keep traffic flowing constantly to people, whatever tier bandwidth that they pay for, they get that on all products. Nothing is faster, nothing is slower. That's basically it for, you know, that's the four dummies, too long, do not read, you know, aspect of it. Okay. So, like, let's be on Comcast, because Comcast freaking sucks.
I don't know. AT&T is pretty bad.
AT&T is awful. I really hate AT&T.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do AT&T. AT&T. So we're going to get kicked off air right now. Talk bad about me.
They're on Verizon. Suck it.
Yeah. AT&T, if let's say majority of AT&T customers love Netflix, right?
Right.
So it's 80% of them are all going to Netflix, right? AT&T decides to do their own streaming service because they bought DirecTV, right? So they're going to slow and make it a Netflix buffer. But hey, our DirecTV on-demand service you can get through us, there's extra tier. That's moving at blazing high speed. Buy ours.
Right.
So that and that ticks people off. And I understandable. But at the same time, the libertarian has, it's a private company. They should be able to do what they want with it. But the government, the federal government, has given them an unfair advantage in the market because they have given them a monopoly over the telecom systems.
Right.
The ability to attach to the telephone poles, to put the equipment out to everywhere else. They've got the tough regulations, like even tapping into the fiber optic channel, which connects to the internet, which is basically, when some people talk about the internet, that's also a multi-layer bean dip of crap. When you see Facebook or the World Wide Web, that's part of the internet. That's right. Not the internet as the end-all, be-all. So
don't we see like only 2% of the internet essentially because of Google?
Not even that. If you just see the internet just through your web browser, you're only seeing like 1-2%. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, like, isn't the because, other 98% like, just, like, child porn and stuff?
No. God, no. No, there's so much other stuff like that. If you use federated protocols or different stuff, like, if you use, like, email, right? That's pre-World Wide Web. You don't need a web browser to do email. That's just a protocol through the network.
Okay.
That's all that is. And there's so many different things like use groups or BBS. These things are going through the network that most people don't even access or decide to touch. That's what's out there in the net.
All right, we're getting too far off.
Am I
for or against the Trump administration undoing what the Obama administration did in December?
That's like I said, it's a tricky. You have to make your own choice for it.
Black or white? Am I for or against, Harry? Are you for or against?
I hate the FCC, and I hate them to death.
Right.
And I get the reason why the ISPs and the big telecoms want off underneath that thumb, because they can make a lot more money and can use that money to help spread out the reach. But the problem is they have shown in the past to be bad actors without that overreach from the FCC.
Yeah.
They have throttled traffic. We have proven so many back in 2015, this classic area that Clayton kept talking about. Sorry, Clayton. But
like the bullshit where I have unlimited. There's two unlimited plans on AT&T.
No, I'm not talking about that. But that's different.
But like, I have two unlimited plans, and then they brand it as unlimited, and one, they throttle you, and you get like barely any internet speed the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can pay like an astronomical amount of money to get the unlimited plus, and then they just throttle you after 22 gigs. Like, it's marketing and it's all bullshit.
Yeah.
And I hate AT&T. And like, I had to buy a Verizon hotspot to stream our Facebook Live because the AT&T business connection here sucks so bad. So like, the service sucks, the companies suck, they all suck. I hate everything about them. And I want freedom. So if I hate the telecoms and I love freedom, am I for or against net neutrality?
Like I said, it's not black and white like that. It's not.
The one time I tried to be black and white, and you won't be black and white with me.
It's
be black and white with me, Harry.
Because the thing is, right, AT&T has no incentive.
Ebony.
AT&T has no incentive, right, to boost your bandwidth. They have no incentive to do that. Nothing. There's
right.
Because you have to take it, and there's no other company that can come in there and give it to you either.
AT&T, okay? You just have to take it.
Right. Now, granted, at the other time, if not net neutrality, then you probably does, like, you can probably benefit, like, from a better Verizon or Verizon Fios or Google Fi or something like that to come in, because Google can go, or Jeff Bezos decides to bring you Amazon Internet and give you high-speed Amazon video Internet that, you know, like, hey, I could get, you know, with your Prime membership, you can also get on Amazon Internet.
Right.
Now, granted, with those regulations, that could sponsor someone like that want to do that, because they can go, like, I can make sure you got high-speed internet to all Amazon servers, you know? I'll throttle you to anything else. Amazon has been shown to do that by kicking off any other streaming thing off the Amazon site that doesn't stream most of their Amazon crap.
Right.
You know? That's why it's hard to find Apple TV on Amazon.
FYI, Amazon now building a private server for the CIA. That was reported this week. They're using their servers to build the CIA private servers.
First off, 80% of the world is probably on Amazon servers. Let's get that.
It's literally 48% of the internet.
It's also weird when you're not on one. Like, when you watch Amazon servers go down and your server's still going, like, woohoo, I'm not on Amazon server.
No, Amazon Web Services is how he's the richest man on the earth.
Yeah. Yeah,
not Prime. Like, it's not Prime. It's that he controls the internet.
Amazon just now started making money.
Yeah.
It was like a year ago, I think it was. They finally turned profit.
Jeff Bezos, Amazon, Washington Post.
Hey, first off, you guys got to understand that Amazon is going to take over the world, okay?
I'm for it. Just come in my house, fly the little drone in here and bring me my things.
Did you see
how many ass wipes I have in there? Did you go in the bathroom? Did you see how many Cottonelle wipes I have?
I'm going to tell you right now, the Amazon
because of Amazon.
The Amazon ecosystem is a lot better than the Apple one.
I agree.
Their Android tablets always update. I've got an old Kindle Fire that I leave in the bathroom,
mm-hmm.
constantly updating. I'm like, wow, this thing updates faster than my Galaxy.
I love my Kindle. Amazon is my favorite company on earth. It surpassed Apple. iOS 11 fiasco. And the little stupid eye thing where it turns mm-hmm. to a wingdings.
Yep.
Fuck Apple.
Yep. I think this might be like Amazon should come back out with their phone. I think this might be the time.
No, let's not get that crazy.
It should be the time.
The Fire Stick is a great little piece of equipment. The
Fire Stick is badass, you know?
It's watching me, but yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did get rid of the Alexa because it is creepy. I don't want that listening to me.
How do you know the Fire Stick is listening to you?
Well, it's unplugged. But it's sitting there. But I mean,
back to net neutrality.
Am I for or against this, Harry?
That's what I said. Like, but it's there's no pro and there's no cons. To me personally, since I can't actively prove that the currently the telecoms aren't throttling me when I go to different sites. You know, I go back to an Ernest Hancock thing. If they can, they will. And so they probably are. So, and they can. So what I like to more concentrate is more for people that are getting on the internet, regardless of these laws, these rules, and getting past the ISP. I forgot to write down the guy's name that posted this in the Wall group for Wall News with the people out in Detroit. It was a motherboard article about the people in Detroit creating their own ISP network, basically getting one central location attaching to the internet fiber and then having that sprawl out using just like Wi-Fi signals throughout the lower part of Detroit.
Right.
It was an amazing article watching these people. And I got online and was like looking at everything they'd done. I would have done it differently. I don't think I would have did like the 3G connection. I think I probably just used GSM cell phone tower technology and didn't and waited for an FCC guy that wanted to drive to the south part of Detroit to take out my radio tower. But that's me.
All right, final net neutrality thoughts. You're letting me down.
I can't. That's the thing. It's kind of hard because like I'm not like the thing is I'm so. I can shield myself from all these like problems of it.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, but the other day I see the benefits, I can see the cost of benefits. But the other thing, when it comes down to it, the biggest problem is the FCC regulations on telecoms and creating, you know, basically like, I think it's more for like, if we could get a hold, this is not the air like a solution, but just more of like the solution for you people who want to play inside the game is that, if the ISPs can talk about how this regulation is hindering their growth, then use that same type of growth talk about like, wow, then we need to break up the regulation that allows you guys to have whole swaths of countries, the country.
Yeah.
You know, then find that we need to break you guys up and go in like there need like many ISPs, many different people to be able to connect to the fiber. And it's pointless the way it's all set up like that, because if they don't do that, if that doesn't happen, that's quickly going to become the connection to the internet fiber is going to become a utility because status want that.
Yeah.
They want it to be a utility, and I can see it why it can be a utility. But I don't want it to be utility. I do not want.
It's not like the pipes to your house. You can't have seven different water pipes to your house. I mean, you guess you could. I'm sure somebody can figure it out. But like,
or the simple, you know, the thing is like, but if you had to compete like something like that, let's say you have Water X Company that did buy the lion rights, like the public road, and pays different money to put these money to the like the public roads.
Right.
They pay a rent to that, and or someone like, I'm just going to build a water tower in your backyard.
Right. Yeah, like I live in an apartment complex. They could go with a different water company, but I mean,
your water comes from the pool anyways. They drain it.
Exactly right. It's from the lake out back.
Oh, dear God.
Speaking of one of these asshole companies, I really hate AT&T. I just think it's the worst company on the planet. And people say no, Comcast is, but AT&T,
EA actually. EA is the worst company.
Really?
Yeah, Electronic Arts, awful company.
I don't know, man. I think AT&T is pretty close. I hate them so much. I have internet, I have phone, I have direct. I just hate them so much. The customer experience is awful. Like, the reason I have a Verizon hotspot is because AT&T couldn't figure out how to help me buy more stuff from them and spend more money with them. They're just that incompetent. Like, it's outrageous how, like, stop buying things and start fixing how incompetent you are. They want to buy Time Warner Cable. CNN is part of it. And the U.S. Department of Justice has told them that they need to sell CNN. This is something that hasn't happened in 40 years, where the U.S. government has sued claiming antitrust laws and that this merger is not in the benefit. Now, you'll remember Obama sued to stop AT&T from buying T-Mobile last year, or 2 years ago, or last year, I think it was. That's a little different than them buying a cable company, but it's sort of, you know, you can make the case that when they create a narrative that Donald Trump is just being petty and stopping the sale of Time Warner to AT&T over CNN, you can make the case that that's fake news and that there's no evidence to that. But you also can see the other side of it where you go, yeah, but he's that type of guy. Like, it's unconscionable that a president would use only Richard Nixon. That's the 40 years ago when the Richard Nixon used antitrust laws to F over one of his political enemies. Like, isn't Donald Trump one of those guys? Of course he would.
Well, it's not like he used the IRS to go after, like, you know, all their groups and different, you know.
Right.
You know, it's not like Obama when he used, remember, he used the IRS to go after liberty groups or any conservative and Tea Party groups.
Right.
So it's, and then, you know, and then Bush used the Patriot Act to go after anyone that looked against him. And then you, let's see, with Clinton, Clinton, that's all I've got to say.
The sale of Turner Broadcasting and its crown jewel CNN, which Donald Trump has called a broadcaster of fake news, is one of two potential options put forward by the U.S. Antitrust Authority in order to sign off on the deal. Those involved in the talks. Three direct people with direct knowledge of the negotiations say that it is all hinging on CNN being sold. Sounds pretty concrete that Donald Trump's wanting CNN to sell them.
No, he has no connection with that. That's fake news.
Yeah.
CNN is a crap entertainment company anyways. They're not a news organization. They do about news as much as Trevor Noah does. So, sorry.
Just thought this was interesting from Politico today. This was from March 15th. But either way, Senator John McCain accused fellow Senator Rand Paul of doing Russian President Vladimir Putin's bidding after Paul blocked an attempt to vote on a treaty for NATO membership for Montenegro. Okay. It's too old. I should have checked the date. Zimbabwe. You might have heard about Zimbabwe. Just a little bit of what is going on there. Zimbabwe is a country just north of South Africa. It is a country that was infected with apartheid politics, where basically white landowners held over from the colonial British days. You're probably familiar with the apartheid of South Africa and Nelson Mandela, and Mandela was in jail for 30 years, got out, became president in the 80s, or was it 90s? I don't know, but Mugabe was a freedom fighter against Ian Smith, who was the head of the apartheid government, mm-hmm. About as white of a British-looking dude as you could possibly imagine. Mugabe was part of the guerrilla freedom fighters in Zimbabwe, then called, what was it called? I can't think of it. Right, it's right on the tip of my head. Rhodesia.
I can't remember it. Rhodesia. I kept thinking Rhode Island, and I knew I was wrong.
So it was then Rhodesia. And then in 1980, his party was able to win a democratic election and take over and force the British apartheid out. And mm-hmm. Mugabe was seen as somebody who was a freedom fighter, and the world cheered that an apartheid government had fallen and a freedom fighter like Mugabe had taken over. And then over the course of the next decade and a half, he started basically stripping all the whites of their land and giving it to military members. He consolidated power by killing off entire tribes of people. It was tens of thousands of people that he slaughtered. Not only would he kill his political rivals, he would kill their entire village and tribe. And so they would not only would he kill them, he'd make sure that power base never rose. So he became just a monster, and then was stripped of, you know, all these accolades. Like, he became seen, like, for those of us who are in our millennial age, like, he's always been seen as a dictator,
right?
A third world dictator. So now he's 93, and people are starting to think about succession. He's still very spry from the video that I've seen of him. But he's got this one right-hand man named Mwaba Chumbawamba. This dude, his name, I just can't even. Like, I can't even say, like, white names, let alone, like, African names. Like, I just can't. I'm just so
Tim.
So bad with it. And I apologize, but, like, Mr. Mnangagwa. Mnangagwa.
Yeah.
Harry, help me. help.
Yeah, Mr. Magawa.
Mr. Magawa.
Mr. Miyagi.
He's basically like his right-hand henchman, mm-hmm. and he's basically more ruthless than Mugabe, and he has been fighting with grace Mugabe, his younger wife. And she has been going into the ruling party and purging a lot of people in the ruling party so she can take over when he dies or when he retires. And Mangawa says, hell no, I've been around for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And he's rules, you know, he's like the henchman on the right, on the right hand of Mugabe. He's like, it's my turn.
Yeah.
It's my turn to be the ruler.
Yeah, I get the ring of power.
Yeah. And then there's the people in the middle, all the regular, you know, Zimbabweans who have dealt with hyperinflation and, you know, like they were taking wheelbarrows full of cash. I mean, the Zimbabwean hyperinflation. I mean, any libertarian that's been around for a decade knows about like that as a cautionary tale. Mm-hmm. I mean,
the Zimbabwe dollar. Everyone would go show you like the trillion dollar
right.
$1 million Zimbabwe dollar. People would love to show.
I think I have a Zimbabwean dollar here somewhere, but yeah, I mean, it was like worth less than what it was printed on.
Yeah, yeah, it was awful.
So they would print $1 million bill, and then it would be worthless by mm-hmm. the time they got done printing it and distributing it.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what's happening in Zimbabwe. Mugabe, basically, there was a military coup. It was a peaceful coup. The military came in and said, no, look at me. I am captain now.
Was it a coup? They did not self-identify as a coup.
Okay. Am I just guessing that their intentions? Or?
Stop assuming their military actions. Yeah,
right.
Their military intentions. It's not a coup. Just coup, half selfies. Yeah, okay, are they... Or Kelfies, would it be because of coup d'etat?
Kelfies? No.
Kelfies?
No, I think it's selfies.
Okay, yeah, so yeah. It's just selfies.
But they have them attached to their AK-47s, so mm-hmm. it's like it's a bayonet attachment.
It's like attachment.
It's a possible attachment. It's a selfie stick. So the military basically says, you know, we're done with this. That's enough of this. Mm-hmm. Because there is a meeting of the party coming up. And they're in December, and Grace was out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Manalawia is out of town,
mm-hmm.
and so the military felt like, all right,
perfect time.
Let's step in, take it over. Turn on the TV Sunday night or last week at some time. There's a gentleman in a military outfit saying, "Look at me, I am captain now," and he took over. And both Grace has not returned.
Wrong country to return to.
Manamana has returned to Zimbabwe. This is probably the most offensive, culturally insensitive breakdown of the Zimbabwe situation of all time, Harry.
Right now, the people in Zimbabwe do not care. They're ecstatic.
They are so happy.
Yeah, some of the video of some of the live feeds.
Yes.
Like some people's their Facebooks and Twitters and stuff like that. They're like, what? They're just having...
Vice is on the ground. And this is one of the reasons I like Vice, is that Vice is always on the ground in these situations and they post unfiltered. Like, it's like you're HBO runs a Vice news show every day. Excuse me. And I watched it. And, like, they're celebrating in the streets. I saw it on YouTube as well. And, like, they're just really optimistic that this is a moment of freedom.
Yeah.
And Mugabe goes on TV and basically doesn't resign. And he just is like, yeah, we'll get this all figured out. Don't worry, everybody. And the whole nation's confused. And all the freedom fighters are like, the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it is. I mean, people, there's a real moment of freedom in that country that hopefully they can actually achieve a democracy, a republic.
Well, do they need a government? hopefully, you know, they don't. Hopefully they don't form a government. Hopefully they, you know, they become a beautiful anarchist state.
Sure.
Show people how it's done.
Like Somalia?
Somalia's not an anarchist state, okay, first off, okay. And
African nations just have a bad reputation, I'm just saying, Harry.
They have a bad reputation because for so many different generations they were under, like, colonial rule, and then were given basically 20th century weapons with 18th century thinking.
Yeah, exactly, you know? Right.
So, like, these people went right back to the 18th century, like, warlord thinking with 20th century. So what do you think is going to happen?
All while having all of the natural resources sold to China, Russia, America, Europe.
The
There's a neocolonialism that has taken place.
Well, that's the other thing is, like, in but that partnership with China, like, it seems some people see that as bad, but a lot of the countries are benefiting. They're using the money from it. And Africa is not a like terrible, and not all spots of Africa is that bad.
Right.
There's a lot of different places in Africa that it's like, it, you know, it's basically not better than Detroit.
Right.
Which is not hard.
Absolutely.
A lot of different, like, I have no intention currently right now to go to Africa, but I've got a lot of buddies doing it, and it's like freaking...
Let me warn you people, if Harry goes to Africa, y'all need to run, because let me explain Harry's heritage. When they outlawed slavery in England, he moved to America, his family moved to America so they could continue stealing people. Slavery.
Yeah, that's one. And went to France to like fight England. went to Canada to fight England over taking the American slaves.
Long story short, you have no plans to go to Africa.
No plans. It does look cool. Like, it's, how can I put it? It's just a different country. It's a different it's a different continent. It's a different culture. And each little spot is different. And the thing is, just like different parts of China or have any small special economic zones, that is slowly happening in Africa,
right,
especially with China's influence. China showing like some of these like tin pot dictators and these awful like corrupt governments that, you know, like, you know, you want to extend your rule, you want power, let them do what they want, but in that city.
Yeah.
Leave them alone. Just leave them alone. They'll make money, collect your taxes, and they'll do what you want. It's the only reason China is still like relevant right now. Don't forget, like after Mao died, China was like, you know, people were starving to death in China. Millions of people were dying, you know, but they just started to do these small special economic zones like Hong Kong and just started to grow from there. And that's why China now is a powerhouse.
Yeah,
they've got tons of these special economic zones that the Chinese government just stays out of. Yes, it's still communist China, but they just know, like, we're going to leave these little pockets alone because we need that money.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. And the same thing with Mugabe. Like, he's been, like, WikiLeaks and all different other people has been exposing a lot of the corruption that was going on in that government that also helped spur a lot of these different people into this age because for the technological age that they live in, and people with these technological advances from the West coming over into Africa to help show, like, one, they thought they were going to use technology to help rig elections that turned to bite them in the butt because people use technology to show that.
Right.
You know, like, and then there was several different, like, different cables to find out, like, Mugabe did have, like, a disease and was using the money to help, like, also corrupting, stealing money to help fix that disease, too. You know, because he had, testicular cancer?
Testicular cancer.
Yeah. Neutered Mugabe. You know.
He still has a great voice. Honestly, Mugabe, I know you retired. You stepped down today. You stepped down at the government. The government's now in disarray. But your voice is fantastic. So if you want to be a co-host sometime, maybe just even do voice work.
It's probably going to be on the Young Turks.
Yeah. He's more of a Young Turks person, to be honest. Maybe show up on, like, Gavin McInnes or something.
Of course. Yeah. All right.
All right. So last story tonight, before we do the bonus show. This came out today. The Indiana Attorney General has said that CBD oil is illegal. Now, cannabinoid oil is legal in Indiana now for people who have a very specific type of epilepsy, and they are children. Now, if you remember Addie's story, which was an episode of The Cost, and I don't remember what episode it was, but if you get The Cost podcast feed, you can, Harry's going to look it up. Addie's story was about that. We were talking about the bill here trying to help get it passed. It did pass. So Addie was able to get CBD oil to help treat herself. You're going to have to.
What?
Yeah, that's good. So that passed. But here's the problem. They narrowed the people who can have CBD oil, which is a derivative of cannabis, which is an oil of it, which is basically like no THC. Like, you can't get high from CBD oil, as we talked about in that episode. So we cannot get high from CBD oil, but we see the benefits of it.
Mm-hmm.
So we have made it legal for a specific, very narrow group of people, which, great. It is helping a friend's daughter. Like, I'm happy that they have access to CBD oil. So stores started carrying CBD oil. Essential oil companies sell it. I can get CBD oil at the local Fresh Thyme market. Like, then they realized, oh, everybody has access to CBD oil now. Everybody's buying CBD oil because they're marketing to this group, but everybody else can buy it. So the Indiana State Police and Excise Police started raiding and basically stealing the inventory of people who had CBD oil. And we've been waiting for the Attorney General to rule on this. And Curtis Hill, who is the Attorney General from Indiana, who has aspirations for higher office, who is no friend of medical marijuana, says that it is, simply put, cannabinoid oil is cannabinoidal is a Schedule I controlled substance because marijuana is a Schedule I controlled substance, he wrote in an advisory opinion. Although it is a relatively new phenomenon, after thoroughly trafficking the language of the Indiana law defining marijuana, it is evident that cannabinoid oil is now and historically has been derived from a part of the plant genus cannabis. He added that at the federal law, the product is illegal as well for human consumption. Only state departments of agriculture and higher education institutes can grow the product under the 2014 Farm Bill. So if lawmakers want this, they have to expand it. So it contains less than 0.3% of THC, the ingredient that gives users their high. So they stopped seizing products but wanted to return any products until the further lab testing are received and legal analysis pursued. Now, Hill is not incorrect in that it is against the law for people to buy CBD oil that are not under this special protected class. But how are they going to get access to it if it's illegal to be sold in Indiana?
Right.
This is the problem with trying to carve out exceptions to freedom. Like, everybody should have access to something that benefits them.
Correct.
It reduces inflammation. It's extremely beneficial for a lot of different things and a lot of different medical issues. It doesn't get you high. He's just ignorant. And, like, he wrote in November, he wrote an op-ed in Indiana. At the same time, don't legalize marijuana in Indiana. They're trying to legalize pot. It's a gateway drug. Research shows that someone who uses marijuana by the age 15 is 3.6 times less likely to graduate from high school, 2.3 times less likely to enroll in college, and 3.7 times less likely to get a college degree. Then there's the matter of impaired driving. You know, it's also marijuana is also linked to crime.
It's awful. Like, he's throwing like useless statistics out there because you can use the same thing for milk, cheese, beer.
Could it be that somebody coffee. Who uses marijuana at 15 is probably part of an unstable home environment, and that is probably why they end up in more crime-ridden situations, or they're in parts of town where the drug war has decimated their community, and so they're more likely to turn to crime. So,
Because you send excise police and stealing people's inventories and taking people to cages.
Right.
You know,
rather than follow the crowd, rather than even flirting with the folly of legalizing marijuana, Indiana lawmakers should stand firm in their resolve to keep our state on a better path.
And what path is that? You know,
less freedom.
Yeah. Less
health.
Less freedom, putting cops in danger because they're having to bust marijuana users. You know,
right.
Instead of it going out busting, you know, real crimes out there, maybe we can get rid of the drug unit and go and reinstate the stolen vehicle unit here in Indiana. Yeah, that's right. Here in Indiana, we don't have a stolen vehicles unit. We don't have one. You can steal a car in Indiana. You can file your police report, but no one's looking for it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy, but the DEA and the drug task force, full on. The FBI was out searching for drugs. Drug dealers were getting the druggies.
Yeah.
But your stolen property, they don't give two craps about.
Not at all. We're going to do our bonus episode on talking politics during the holidays. after this.
Like that one. So, oh, by the way, oh, Addie's story was number 7 in the cost, or 194 of We Are Libertarians.
All right, cool. So go back in the feed, 194, if you want to hear more about CBD oil. If you want to get that bonus episode, you've got to go give $5 a month to the Patreon. You get an RSS feed. You get all kinds of bonus content. You get higher quality commercial-free audio. You get usually 30 to 90 minutes of extra content a week. If you love We're Libertarians, then you want to, that's the best $5, $10, $25, or $100 that you could possibly spend. Forget Christmas presents, buy yourself a Christmas present, and get the gift of more information, more entertainment, more wall. So get that at WeAreLibertarians.com. We're going to talk, again, surviving the holidays, just a little chit-chat, behind-the-scenes stuff. And shout out to the We Are Libertarians group. I put up a poll. A lot of the content in this was, hey, I put up a poll. What do you want to hear me talk about? What's some uncovered stuff that we're not talking a lot about? And I found some stuff in there that I liked. One of the top answers was the Air Force pilots drawing a penis in the air. if you haven't seen this beautiful use of government technology, just Google search Air Force penis. And you will find it. Don't do it at work, but it is hilarious.
I'm sorry, like when I was reading the story, I kept like, they did it with like an F/A-18.
Yeah, it's badass.
The plane's badass. And, but the thing is, my brain instantly was like, I wonder if you can do that with like an A-10.
Yeah.
Or an F-4. That'd be awesome. Anyway, sorry. Yeah.
No, you're fine. Yeah. Sorry. All right, cool. All right, thanks everybody final thoughts. How dare I? Thoughts. Harry.
My final thoughts on that. Drawing a penis in the sky with an A-10, that'd be an amazing feat to do. Because you got to get the condensation just right, and so that A-10's got to be flying just to get, you know, who's crazy enough to do that. So the other thing I wanted to go on to is my final thoughts on the Indiana's a really screwed up state sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's crazy how much freedom that you are allowed here to do in Indiana, and then some of the most back-ass,
inane,
corrupt, inane government crap happens here. It is like the whole liquor lobby. You're like, oh, now we're all for Sunday sales so they can keep cold beer, and they're doing things in a lobby, and they're doing this like these private lobby groups came to the decision, and they're going to push that to our state house. I'm like, what the heck? That's like, if I don't get cold beer at the grocery store, like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And it's, you know, so when people talk about, like, local politics is, like, it's very, very important to get in your local races and support your, you know, if you want to, you know, get into that, you know, I can see it. Yeah, it makes sense. I still get cold beer on Sunday because they allow breweries to get cold beer, and if sure. you go to local Indiana distilleries, you can get local booze. But yeah, so yeah, those are my thoughts.
My final thought is Trump already kind of roundabout endorsed Roy Moore, but look for a full-throated endorsement from Trump for Roy Moore next week, because they've got to pass this bill and this Senate tax bill. And over the next couple of weeks, he's not going to want the discussion to be about basically him and his rich buddies getting a tax cut. So he's going to do something to distract the population from the real story of the tax bill and endorse Roy Moore, maybe even fly down to Alabama and put his arm around him and just put him over the finish line, because I think he wants that distraction. The holiday will kind of lull everybody. Nobody will talk, you know, people won't be paying attention to the news. Then we get back to work Monday or Tuesday. I think Roy Moore is great. So that's my prediction. Be watching out for it. All right, guys, thanks so much for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. Hope you learned a lot. If you love this show, if you love what you've learned, if you learned one thing, if you understood one thing better, tell your friends, post it and say, hey, I learned something about X. Or, I really like this show because these guys are funny. Mm-hmm. Or, that was the most offensive breakdown of Zimbabwe I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Maybe not that one. I don't want to go to prison or anything. You can go to prison for, like, hate speech now, right?
Yeah.
If you're white.
Especially in Canada.
I can. You can't.
Well, yeah. Yeah, more you. Yeah. They just kicked me out again.
All right. Thanks for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. And we'll see you next week. Until then, be good to each other. Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.